Hi, this is Cherise Kenyon, and you're listening to the Beauty Me podcast, all about beauty beyond the BS. This week, I'm taking it easy and just enjoying some of my favorite magazine cover stories. It's been a really hectic first quarter. Like, we're through the first few months of the year, and for me, it's been pretty hectic with work and life and just being away from home. So whenever I have extra time, I actually sit down with my magazines. They stack up. I'll buy them in person, I'll order them online, and they'll go in this stack. And I'm like, okay, I need that afternoon to just sit and go through them with some music on in the background and no work distractions. So this episode is just a way for me to go through some of the April issues. I'm picking some of my favorites, also talking about retouching. As if you're new here, you might not know, but I'm also a photographer as well as a podcast host, and I'm a photographer that does not lean heavily into retouching. So over the years of having this podcast, sometimes I will dedicate entire episodes to retouching when it comes to a specific magazine cover, because some do way too much, some do a little bit. I'm not saying that anybody even needs it, but there's just different levels to it. So I'll definitely get into that. And by the way, I have got interviews coming for you soon. Just stay tuned. But for now, let's get into these April issues. First, I'm going to start with Vogue Korea, which features Vittoria Ceretti on the cover. And she's photographed by Luigi Andiango in an all Prada story. She's actually got two covers, again featuring Prada. The other cover is a black and white image. It's lovely. She's wearing this white Prada dress that we've seen on Hunter Schafer, who's the actress from Euphoria. She wore it to the Golden Globes and she looked amazing in it. It's got a lot of movement to it, this dress, which means it looks great in motion. But for me, the black and white cover is just not as exciting. It is gorgeous and it's got bright orange cover lines on it, so it definitely works. But for me, the color cover is really giving me kind of a 90s vibe in the way that the color comes through. It really takes me back to some of the Vogue and Elle issues of the 90s, where you just see this richness of color, not like technicolor, not really bright, but solid saturated color. And I really like that about this Vogue Korea cover. It's a really simple image. It's basically Vittoria pretty much filling the entire cover, although we do see the sky in the background. The image is cropped to just above her knees and she's framed by blue skies and the green of traffic lights. And I really love how the background just frames her in her purple belted Prada jacket. And it really helps the orange Vogue logo just really pop. It's just a gorgeous, nicely designed cover. It's not groundbreaking or anything like that, but it is beautiful to look at. Vittoria is also wearing this knitted orange necklace. It's almost like a neck piece that's got super long pieces of wool attached, perhaps. I can't quite work it out, but it looks really good against the purple. And she's also wearing a black leather headband. I personally am obsessed with headbands right now. I not only wear them to, you know, prep my makeup, but I actually just like wearing thick black headbands. I'm going through this phase of growing a short bob, and the headband has really helped me disguise the shortness on the sides because I've got an undercut, and I'm going to keep getting an undercut, which means it's shaved all around the sides and the back because it really helps the bob to be more flippy. So that's me and headbands. But I have loved seeing headbands used extensively in much of the Prada advertising as well. I just think it's a really clean look. I feel like anyone can do it and it's a look rather than it just being makeup prep. So the person who made that decision to put the headband in is hairstylist Gon Konishita. And I love how they've worked with the makeup artist Syl Bruinsma to give Vittoria, it's just a very classic look. She's got the black headband, can't see any earrings, and she's got taupe eyeshadow, again, quite a 90s look, and a red lip. It's a classic combination. And what I really love is if you manage to get a look inside this magazine, the whole feel of this story really takes us back to the early days of fashion street style. It definitely takes me back to the days of the brilliant Bill Cunningham, one of my favorite photographers ever. He started doing these kind of street style shots of society women in Manhattan from the 1960s onwards. But this Vittoria Cerretti story also reminds me of, do you remember those early 2000 street style blogs? I feel the biggest one was The Sartorialist by Scott Schumann. And we also had Brian Boy. And these were these blogs where they would just take loads of images of people on the street, clocking their style, and just upload them. And we could all really take inspiration from looks around the world at fashion weeks. Speaking of blogs, by the way, I do think they're slowly making a comeback. They are the perfect space for those of us who might get anxiety about creating, about being seen, being uncomfortable with being seen, but still wanting to share something with the world. And blogs are also a great space for people who want to create without the need for having to make money from creating. And they're also great for anyone that does make money on social media, but can't always guarantee that they're going to be seen and shown on Instagram. Over the past few days, there's been a lot of conversation over on Threads, because Adam Mosseri made some comments about perhaps it's just your content, you know, perhaps it's not the algorithm. And I am inclined to agree with him to some extent, because just because we've spent hours making something and we love it, it doesn't mean it's going to make a dent anywhere in the world. Yes, the algorithm is absolutely skewed towards content from white creators, 100%, and creators of a certain age, much younger. But I do think sometimes you could look at what you're doing and think, hey, does this appeal to me? Would I want to watch this if I wasn't me? I just think blogs could be a great option for people that are concerned about their income, but also those who actually don't need to care about making money from creating. So maybe I'll do a whole episode on blogs. I might look back in time at some cool ones actually, and maybe you could share yours with me. Definitely, you should know my DMs are always open over on Beauty Me Podcast on Instagram. You can also find me on Threads at Charisse_Kenyon. Let me know what were your favorite blogs of the past, and I will add them to that episode. Next, let's look at Vogue Scandinavia, which features the one and only Björk. And I'm probably going to go on a little bit about this one because Björk is so deserving of this. I had a real reaction when I saw this entire story. I really did. I was literally like, this is so beautiful. I did a recent episode about Cho Minardi's first cover for British Vogue, and that featured Twigs, and I broke that down. But I did not have this reaction that was just like, oh, I need to show somebody this image. And I think Björk, it was worth the wait because she's never had a Vogue cover story before, which to me is ridiculous. But I also love that it's Vogue Scandinavia making a fuss of someone that is from Iceland. I think if she had to wait this long, I can't think of a better publication for her to have her first Vogue moment. And it really is a moment, this cover. She's wearing a beautiful illusion dress from that Margiela Artisanal collection. That's the fashion show that basically broke the internet back in January. And if you want to know more about that, I do talk about it extensively on episode 234. So feel free to check that out. But yeah, that was a show that literally broke the internet. And I love that the designer behind it, John Galliano, gave specific permission for Björk to wear this on the cover. She is an icon. And if you don't know Björk, I'm going to just give you a little bit of her history. She's been a musical and style icon for almost four decades. She started out as a lead singer of the Sugar Cubes back in 1986, and then she went solo in 1992. She is the woman who no doubt persuaded a lot of other women to wear bangs when the video for her very cute song, It's Oh So Quiet, came out in 1995. That video was directed by Spike Jones. And in the video, she's just wearing the most simple little shift dress. It's like this orangey yellow color. And she's just being very Björk. And it's just super cute. And I do think a lot of people would have thought, I can wear bangs. I feel that fringes are often seen as kind of like a very mature thing, but Björk has always had this very youthful energy to her. And it's just a really cute video. Make sure you check it out. Björk is also the person that wore the swan dress to the 2001 Oscars. Do you remember that? She literally wore a swan dress. So if you kind of think of like almost like a ballet tutu, the skirt of the dress was like the swan's body, and the long neck of the swan came all around her neck, and we just saw like the swan's head on the front. I mean, yeah, that's 23 years ago, before Gaga was wearing meat on the red carpet. So I feel Björk's always ahead of her time. She wore a crystal face mask to meet then Prince Charles. Of course, he's King Charles now. And she's the woman who had an Alexander McQueen dress specially made for her. And then she literally sewed it into her skin. She sewed these tiny pearls into her skin for the video for her song Pagan Poetry. Again, that was in 2001. I actually made a video all about that video because it blew me away, her dedication to style. And I just think Björk is so much more than a face. She hasn't become that performer that's there to look pretty all the time. She's happy to lean into looking quirky or silly or weird or even ugly, rather than fitting into societal notions of beauty. So for me, she's a breath of fresh air. And I was really proven in my thoughts when I shared a video about this cover over on TikTok. I think it's nearly on 20,000 views on TikTok, which isn't a lot, but it is absolutely a lot when it comes to someone like Björk. If it had been about Beyonce, you know, there'd be tons more views, or Doja Cat, who's always causing controversy, 10 times that amount, 20 times that amount. But what I've loved seeing is the reaction to the Björk video. So many people are like, wow, how has it taken this long for Björk to get a cover? Other people are like, yes. It's almost like fashion has caught up with Björk, and now they're like, oh, wow, we really need to feature her. I'll just share some of the comments, actually, because I just think it's so cool when you put something out there and you kind of have to have an attitude of, what's that quote? So without expectation. So I can't remember who said that. It was like, so without expectation, put things out there without expectation. And it can be quite hard because, as I mentioned earlier, you put a lot of work into these videos and sometimes the videos do not get seen. Sometimes they go wild. But I think when it's someone like Björk, who is not the typical performer in any way, she doesn't sound like anybody else. She doesn't look like anybody else. She doesn't dress like anybody else. She's purely herself. I feel that she's someone that's kind of an icon for anyone who feels that they don't fit into, you know, the Kardashian look or the Instagram look or the supermodel look. She's someone for those who feel a little bit different, and she's let them know it's okay to be different. So I really was super happy when this video, I think it did like 11,000 overnight, and I was like, yes, that means it has got to the people who love Björk, and that's who it's for. So I just wanted to share some of the comments. Literally, the latest one came in 17 minutes ago, and someone called Christos said, Björk wearing Margiela on her debut blew my mind. Oh, what he's referring to there is the fact that Björk said on an Instagram post, wearing Margiela for this cover felt like a full circle moment, because back in 1993, when she released her debut album, called Debut, by the way, she's wearing Margiela. So I just thought, you couldn't even make it up, could you? We're talking about the fact it's taken so long for her to have a cover, but maybe it was just meant to be. 30 years later, she would be wearing Margiela again. So I really love that. Let's look at some of the other comments. One of the first people to comment was India, and we're mutual friends on TikTok. And she said, this editorial is insanely beautiful and so Björk coded. She looks fire and so cool. And I really get what she's saying there. For me, this cover feels like Björk was allowed to be herself. As I mentioned earlier, there's always retouching involved. And yes, you can see that Björk has been retouched. But for me, it's not in that ridiculous way of let's take 30 years or 20 years off her face. Plus, they were happy to show some video from the shoot. And you can clearly see that around her lips, she's got like some tiny wrinkles. And yes, those wrinkles and the lipstick that kind of, you know, bleeds into the wrinkles have been retouched for the cover. I understand that. They haven't turned her into this tiny little child, which is what happens with so many covers. I feel like Björk is herself on this, and I really hope that she is. Somebody else, also a friend in real life, Rachel, said, "This is art. I love Björk." And then she's got like kind of like a little teary face because, yeah, it's just, it's amazing. It's taken so long for this. Lots of people saying, "I cannot believe this is her first Vogue cover. She's literally a living piece of art herself." That was from Your Alt Auntie. Lots of people are calling her a goddess, a legend, a genius, a queen, mother. Mother is just like the biggest compliment these days, I feel. Somebody else said, "Björk always served top tier. She does not mess around. Fashion is art for her." That's from JJ. Combat Moth said, "Fabulous. She's always been ahead of her time. Fashion is finally on the same page." Boo Kitty said, "In some ways, it feels like fashion finally caught up with Björk. She's amazing and this feature is so deserved." So yeah, that's two comments there that really allude to the fact that perhaps it's just that fashion's caught up with Björk. She's always been that outlier. You know, she's wearing swan dresses. She's not wearing Gucci velvet tuxedos on the red carpet. She's not wearing Schiaparelli that's like split all the way down the front. She's not going out with her nipples painted. She's just doing things very much her own way. And we have to celebrate people like that. People like Björk remind us that we don't all have to look the same. But anyway, let's get back to her being on the cover. And she's photographed by Vidar Logi, who is an Icelandic photographer who's worked extensively with Björk in the past, including the album artwork for her 2022 album for Sora. It's styled by Björk's longtime friend and collaborator, Edda Gudmundsdottir. And I love that they actually went to the same school. They literally grew up together. And I think it's because of that they seem to have that perfect understanding between a stylist and muse. You know, I'll compare it to Laura Roach and Zendaya. I think there's a trust there. And that's really important because if you can't trust your stylist, it's going to show. And I think that's the problem. I was literally just looking at a cover of Birdie featuring Serena Williams. Obviously a legend in her own right, an amazing tennis star, a real advocate for just women and empowerment. And she did a cover and I don't know. I wonder if Serena styles herself, because everybody deserves to feel amazing, but it is not a good cover. I'm just going to say it's not a good look. I was like, why? Of course, she's on the cover, if you don't know, to celebrate the fact that she's bringing out her own beauty line, which is called WYN, spelled W-Y-N, WYN Beauty. She's been working on it for 6 years and she's launching 10 products in 680 Ulta stores in the States. So that is big news. Absolutely, I wish her all the best in that. I do wonder about the future of that beauty brand because we have so many, and I feel Serena is just amazing at being Serena. But anyway, I've gone off topic. The cover for me just felt like uncomfortable. And I wonder if she worked with a stylist or if she's one of those people that believes they, you know, they know themselves so well that they pick their own stuff. But yeah, it's just, I think you can really see when there's a great relationship, there's a real understanding and trust between a stylist and muse. So back to Björk for Vogue Scandinavia, we see her in Rick Owens, including the inflatable shoes, which have to be seen to be believed. So definitely head to my TikTok or Instagram to see this video. She's wearing Delcor. She's wearing a beautiful blue paint splashed Robert One look. And she's also wearing this just stunning hand-embroidered look from Rahul Mishra. The piece itself is called Dragonfly in a Petri Dish. So you can only imagine how beautiful this is. And you will need to see it to believe it, because it's pretty much indescribable. It's like a huge Petri dish made out of silk, perhaps, that's attached to this black dress. And on the front of the Petri dish, there is an embroidered glistening dragonfly. It's just so, so extra. And just Björk makes it look like a piece of art, because I think she is a piece of art. As well as this being Björk's first Vogue cover, it's also the first Vogue cover for makeup artist Andrew Gallimore. And the way he and the mask designer James T. Merry have worked together is so perfect. Every look is something that needs to be screenshot and zoomed in on, which was definitely what I was doing when I first saw this story. I think if I had to pick a favorite makeup look, it's the one where we see Björk wearing this blue mask. It's definitely giving us like 80s illustrations, 80s makeup advertising, somebody said on my TikTok. And I love how Andrew has made her brows really thick. They're almost like caterpillars, you know, those big hairy caterpillars, in the best way. And then he's also added lots of layers of lashes, very feathery. And he's really overlined her red lips to kind of give her a 1920s little bow shape. Also, she's wearing this red blush, and for me, it's a pure exercise in the fact that anybody can wear any color. You just have to find the right shade for you, because the red blush looks amazing, and Andrew's actually really placed it very low on her face, almost like a contour, so it's definitely giving 80s vibes, and again, you need to see it to believe it. I think the entire team knocked this one out of the park. It's just so surreal and beautiful. Next, let's look at Numero's April-May issue, which is a tribute to the beauty of nature, photographed by Kenny Germain. I haven't looked at the inside of this magazine because it's really the cover that blew me away. What I really liked is, even though they've said it's talking about the beauty of nature, it hasn't gone the typical route. It would have been easy for the team to just go with this super pretty, delicate floral direction, you know, pink flowers and blue skies, blonde hair, but instead the cover hones in on the beauty of black, and that all starts with the dark skin of model Akon Changu, who is an Australian model of South Sudanese heritage. Her beauty is indescribable, really, and it's only enhanced by this headpiece that's made by Yumiko Hikagi. It's essentially a huge black afro that Yumiko has decorated all over with hand-painted black roses. And it really transforms Akon into a piece of art. And then we've got these really fluffy lashes by Alexia Amzalek. And she's very doll-like. The look is very doll-like, but it's more like, oh, it's so hard to describe. It's just extremely striking. And again, you need to see it to believe it. So check out my Instagram at BeautyMePodcast. And within that video, you'll also see a little bit of the look in motion, so you can really see the impact of the headdress and the lashes. Okay, let's go over to Rihanna for Vogue Plus, because everyone's been talking about it. However, everyone's been saying that it's Rihanna on the cover of Vogue China, and it's not technically correct. She's actually on the cover of the Gen Z version of Vogue China, which is Vogue Plus. And I actually feel quite bad for the actress who is on the cover of Vogue China for April. Her name is Tang Wai, and I feel like no one is ever going to talk about her cover, so I just wanted to put it out there. But I get it. Rihanna doing any kind of cover is a huge story. Everybody wants to talk about it. And people like to get their videos out first. I get it. They're excited. They're like, let me make a video real quick about Rihanna on the cover of Vogue China, but they fail to see that it's actually Vogue Plus. But anyway, it makes a lot of sense as a business move, because Rihanna's beauty brand, Fenty Beauty, launched in China this week at Sephora. So of course, she's going to be really trying to reach out to the Gen Z consumer to ensure that Fenty is as big over there as it is over here. Photographed in Los Angeles by Highland Ma and styled by Alvin Yu, this is the final cover we're getting from the brilliant multi-hyphenate and editorial director of Vogue China, Margaret Zhang, who recently announced her departure from the magazine. I'm really excited for her next move because Margaret was a vlogger back in 2009. She's an OG influencer. And when she joined Vogue China in 2021, her predecessor had been there for 15 years. So she's someone that can absolutely get in there and make changes. And apparently now she's going into filmmaking. So I can't wait to see what's next for her. When it comes to the styling of this Rihanna editorial, which is described as a collab with the magazine, which I really like. It's like she's really managed to work with them to produce not only her shoot, but there are several pages of beauty stories in there, including a story about braids and how they are interpreted differently around the world. So if you can get your hands on Vogue Plus, do it, because I'm going to try and get one. But I think it is a collaboration. There's so much in there. And of course, it's all about what we're seeing Rihanna wearing as well. So that includes custom Louis Vuitton by Pharrell, which is the Western inspired black look that you might have seen. It's the red background. She's wearing a hat. We see Mugler. And my favorite look is this very cloud-like white dress, which is by upcoming Chinese designer C Plus Series. And we also see the viral post-it note covered jacket from provocative Swedish designer Av. If you don't know Av, they basically do very silly catwalks kind of stunts. So I think last season they gave people gloves so that they could start throwing rubbish at the models as they walked down the catwalk. So yes, definitely provocative. But I have to say the post-it note covered jacket, it definitely makes a statement. Rihanna's on the phone covered in post-it notes. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of fun. Of all the images, though, I think it's this surreal mirror image. Well, there's actually two mirror images that we see. So you'll see like Rihanna holding a mirror and you'll see her reflection in it. I've always loved the idea of mirrors. I feel that we are obsessed with ourselves and we're obsessed with our reflections. And I think reflections are odd anyway, because what we see isn't necessarily what other people see, because, you know, we're flipped. There's just so much room for interpretation there. But in a video that I made about this cover story, I bring in people like Claude Cahun, who was a collage artist in the 1930s. And I bring it right to today, where for another magazine, Anna Cleveland, who is the daughter of the iconic model Pat Cleveland, she does a story that involves mirrors. And I just think it's just really cool. I'm surprised more people don't do it, but at the same time, many of us do it. I've got several shoots that I've done with mirrors in the past. So yeah, it just speaks to the fact that we're very self-obsessed. When it comes to the nails, they're by Kim Truong, and she shared a lot of details on her Instagram stories the day that this story really broke. She shared that she used Après press-ons to create custom metallic red stilettos for the black Louis Vuitton look that we see. And she also created a second, much more subtle style, again using Après. And this time, it just looked like regular length nails with one coat of baby's breath polish, which is a very pale pink. For me, although this story revolves around Rihanna, the real star has to be makeup artist Priscilla Ono. She's the global makeup artist for Fenty Beauty. And I just feel like she really got to have fun with this story. She gives us so many different looks. And it's like there are all these little clues. And for me, it's a masterclass in how global and local trends influence our makeup choices. So Priscilla gives us chola brows, paying homage to her Mexican heritage, as well as red, or what she calls rouge brows. We see very thin, long brows, which I tried to replicate myself for the video, and I plucked quite a few hairs out, and I actually do love it. I think I really suit thin brows. She gives us delicately blushed cheeks, and my favorite look has to be when Rihanna is wearing the white C Plus Series dress with these gorgeous looped braids by Yusuf. And Priscilla gives her this stained lip. And for me, it instantly took me to the 1992 movie Bram Stoker's Dracula, which stars Gary Oldman. And if you've seen the film, you know what I mean, because that stained lip really reminds me of the Sadie Frost character, Lucy. She's, you know, she's turned into a vampire and she's wearing white and she's obviously been drinking some blood. So Rihanna's definitely giving me that vibe. And that's definitely my favorite look of this story. And by the way, literally just a day ago, Vogue Plus announced that that C Plus series dress look will be a new digital cover option for anyone that buys the digital version. So I've got one last mention of covers that I love, but I have to confess it's not April. It's a special edition of Harper's Bazaar Arabia's March issue, but it's been on my mind for a while, so I just had to share it with you. By the way, Harper's Bazaar Arabia, I think it's kind of one to watch when it comes to the covers. Some of them are really stunning. I just don't think it gets as much attention because it's not as big a title. I actually wrote for Harper's Bazaar Arabia a very long time ago when I lived in Dubai. But let's talk about the shoot anyway. It's photographed by Vladimir Marty and it's stunning in its simplicity. At first glance, it's almost like a piece of silhouette art, which is where you'll see like black shapes cut out. And in this case, it looks like a black shape against a pale green background. And it was on that first look that it instantly reminded me of the work of painter Kara Walker. She's known for her brilliant storytelling via her silhouette work. But there's, you know, it's not just pretty illustrations. She's discussing race, gender, sexuality in her work. And you should definitely look her up if you're into your art, Kara Walker. But when I looked more closely at the image, I realized that it was just a very dramatically lit image of the stunning Ducky Thot showing off some gorgeous Gucci Ankara jewelry. Again, I think it's one you definitely need to check out because it's so simple, but you just need to see it. You need to see how the gold plays against Ducky Thot's skin and against that green background. It's just, I feel like it's definitely a piece of art that you could see on your wall. Before I go, there was one other April cover story that I was thinking about including. It's actress Nicole Kidman, photographed by the iconic photographer Mario Sorrenti for USL. But as I mentioned earlier, just the amount of retouching. I can usually just discuss things and kind of try and be, you know, try and look at it from all angles, but the amount of retouching on this Nicole Kidman shoot is just, it just felt silly. And actually, I'm trying to find the right words. In some of the images, she does not look good. And I'm literally like, is that even the right word for me to say? It's not like I would ever say she doesn't look beautiful or she looks ugly. It's not that. She just doesn't look right. Maybe that's the right word. Definitely go look up the images yourself. I think it's such a shame because, one, Nicole is a brilliant actress. Most recently, I've been watching her in Expats on Amazon Prime. But she is also one of those actresses whose face has changed a lot over the years. You can't deny it. And that's absolutely none of my business. But it doesn't mean that I also have to disregard and kind of lie and say that I don't find these facial changes distracting when I'm watching her at work on screen. I think it's really hard to find a character believable when the actress playing them seems to have trouble showing emotion. If the eyebrows don't move or the jawline seems fixed and pulled, how can they show me that they're a concerned mother whose child's gone missing or angry about her husband's affair? You know, I think that's not my fault, you know. And it's a shame because the looks in this story, which is the reason why I am still mentioning it to you, they're styled by Nicola Formichetti and they are so good. First of all, we see Nicole wearing lots of black. There's this amazing oversized black blazer with tights and strappy heels. She's wearing a gorgeous draped Loewe dress. And my favorite image, she happens to be wearing black Dolce & Gabbana lingerie. And she's lying on a large mirror, which of course I've been talking about mirrors today. And so we'll see her lying on the mirror and we see her body and the reflection. And it just could have been amazing, but because the retouching is so extensive on all of the images that show her face, of course I zoomed in and it's just like, is it just me? Is it just me that's bothered by this? Because as I mentioned earlier, there's retouching that's done for, like I mentioned, I think Björk's lipstick might have bled a little bit around the lips. So in the images, it's been retouched. It's perfect. It's flawless. But I still think Björk looks like herself. Whereas Nicole, I couldn't tell you if she looks like herself because each image is airbrushed differently. So there's one image where her hair is pulled back and they've given her this very solid, these very solid cheeks and jaw, and it just looks so harsh. And I don't know, it just always makes me wonder about the person, because I think I've said it before, I always wonder about when they look in the mirror, do they look at themselves? Do they feel unattractive? Do they feel that they absolutely must have retouching done? Do they feel ugly without retouching? Or do they simply accept that it's all part of being a success in Hollywood? I know that women have it harder than men because once you get past a certain age, you're seen as older and less attractive. So why wouldn't Nicole Kidman say yes to having all this retouching done? I don't know. It's just always going to be funny for me. And that doesn't mean that every picture that I put out of myself, I won't say it's been retouched, but have I had moments where I'm just like, oh, I don't like that. And I think about it 100%. I think years ago, I think I might have messed around with Facetune, but that was because I had maskne. So I had removed some of my spots, but I would never, ever change the size of my eyes, my nose, my jawline. I would never make anything sharper or smaller. But that doesn't make me any better than anyone that does choose to do this. I'm not saying that. I just think it's just all, it's very much smoke and mirrors, obviously. And some people would argue, well, that's what fashion is. And I'm like, yes, but what about the person that's in those pictures? How do they feel? And what about the people looking at those pictures thinking, oh my God, I could never look like that at that age. I'm ugly, you know. By the way, if you want to hear me talking a little bit more about retouching in magazines, then you definitely need to check out my recent appearance on the OG beauty podcast, Fat Mascara. I was kindly invited to co-host alongside the amazing Jen Sullivan. I have the best time with her every time. It's my second time co-hosting. And this is episode 525, so I'll share a link in the show notes for you. But Jen had all the talking points ready for me ahead of this chat. We talked about so many things. And one of those things was the fact that YouTube now requires creators to disclose whether they have used AI tools to create content. Jen brought this up as a topic, and I essentially said that if YouTube is going to make creators do that, fine, you know, go for it. But doesn't that mean that magazines should also disclose whether the latest cover that we're drooling over has been subject to AI retouching? Surely that's the same thing. Magazines want to sell copies. They're retouching the stars on the cover. Let us know inside, by the way, Nicole's been retouched to take 5 years off, or, you know, whatever. If YouTube has to do it, why don't the magazines? But anyway, let me know what you think. My DMs are open. You can find me at Beauty Me Podcast on Instagram or X, formerly known as Twitter. You can also find me on Threads at Charisse_Kenyon. Or you can email me, beautymepodcast@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this episode, do please share it with a friend, and do please leave a rating on Spotify or take a second to write a quick review anywhere else you like to listen. It really helps. Thank you so much for being here. I'll see you next time.